Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Bridget Meese from StarNet. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Julie Cartel, Director of Clinical Services at Rosecrans in Champaign-Urbana. But first, disability news for the week of November 28, 2016. Citing disproportionate use among students with disabilities, the U.S. Secretary of Education is calling for schools to stop relying on physical punishment to address behavior issues. In a letter to governors and state education officials across the country, Secretary of Education John B. King Jr. said corporal punishment sends the wrong message and should be halted in the 22 states where the practice is still allowed. King wrote in correspondence this month, quote, "School-sponsored corporal punishment is not only ineffective, it is a harmful practice and one that disproportionately impacts students of color and students with disabilities. This practice has no place in the public schools of a modern nation that plays such an essential role in the advancement and protection of civil and human rights," end quote. Already, corporal punishment is banned in 28 states, including Illinois, but it remains widely used elsewhere. Education Department data indicates that 110,000 students were subjected to some type of physical punishment in school during the 2013-14 academic year. The odds of experiencing corporal punishment were consistently higher for kids with disabilities and black children, disparities that King said, quote, "shock the conscience," end quote. Though corporal punishment is intended to influence a child's behavior, King said that the practice often backfires, with research suggesting that it can prompt kids to become more aggressive or oppositional and can have long-term mental health consequences. In many cases, King said that the punishments allowed in schools would be considered criminal assault or battery if applied to adults in the very same states. What's more, he said, such practices have already been banned in U.S. prisons and military training facilities. King said, quote, "While some may argue that corporal punishment is a tradition in some school communities, society has evolved, and past practice alone is no justification. No school can be considered safe or supportive if its students are fearful of being physically punished. We strongly urge states to eliminate the use of corporal punishment in schools," end quote. The Education Department correspondence comes as 80 organizations, including the National Disability Rights Network, the Association of University Centers on Disabilities, and the National Down Syndrome Congress, issued a joint letter to policymakers urging similar action. The group said that children with disabilities are often subjected to corporal punishment for exhibiting behaviors related to their special needs. The Labor Department's contentious overtime ruling was blocked Tuesday by a federal judge in Texas, putting one of President Obama's top regulatory initiatives in jeopardy. The rule would have extended overtime pay to more than 4 million workers, including most people serving as direct support professionals for people with disabilities. Starting on December 1st, it would have required employers to pay overtime to most salaried workers who earn less than $47,476 annually, a much higher threshold than the current annual salary limit of $23,660. In a 20-page order, Texas U.S. Judge Amos Mazant issued a temporary injunction halting the rule nationwide. In his ruling, Mazant wrote, quote, "Due to the approaching effective date of the final rule, the court's ability to render a meaningful decision on the merits is in jeopardy. A preliminary injunction preserves the status quo while the court determines the department's authority to make the final rule as well as the final rule's validity," end quote. Dozens of business groups and 21 states' attorneys general challenged the overtime rule in federal court. The order puts the future of Obama's overtime rule in doubt. Experts say the litigation and possible appeal process is likely to drag out until the inauguration, which means President-elect Donald Trump could scrap the overtime changes by dropping the defense of the rule, said Ryan Glasgow, a partner at the D.C. law firm Hunton & Williams, LLP. Quote, "Mr. Trump and his hand-picked Secretary of Labor will have a lot to say about whether the DOL will continue to pursue the rule in one form or another," end quote. The U.S. Supreme Court is set to examine whether the nation's busiest state for capital punishment is trying to put to death a convicted killer who's intellectually disabled, which would make him ineligible for execution under the court's current guidance. Lawyers for prisoner Bobby James Moore, age 57, contend that the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, the state's highest criminal court, ignored current medical standards and required use of outdated standards when it decided Moore isn't mentally disabled. That ruling removed a legal hurdle to Moore's execution for the shotgun slaying of a Houston grocery store clerk in 1980. Clifford Sloan, Moore's lead lawyer, told the justices in written briefs submitted ahead of Tuesday's scheduled oral arguments, Sloan said, "The Texas court is a conspicuous outlier among state courts and, quote, defies both the Constitution and common sense. Such a head-in-the-sands approach ignores advances in the medical community's understanding and assessment of intellectual disability over the past quarter century," end quote. Moore's lawyers want his death sentence set aside, contending his punishment would violate the Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment and the Supreme Court's 2002 ruling in a North Carolina case that prohibited execution of the mentally disabled. The Texas Attorney General's office says the state fully complies with Supreme Court precedents. The state points to its use of 1992 clinical definitions for intellectual disability as cited by the High Court in its 2002 decision, and the office says it has consulted and considered more recent standards. And finally, during the first 6 months of 2016, staff members at a Seattle, Washington high school confined a student with a developmental disability alone in a room on 617 separate occasions, an average about six times each school day. The extensive use of the approved but controversial technique occurred despite a 2015 state law that sought to limit how often school officials physically restrain or isolate students, tactics typically used to control outbursts from students with behavioral or emotional disabilities. The same law requires schools to report such incidents to state education officials who, quote, may use this data to investigate the training, practices, and other efforts used by schools and districts to reduce the use of restraint and isolation, end quote. But review of the attempt to collect this information found inconsistent compliance that makes it impossible to judge the effectiveness of the new legislation. Nearly half of the state's 295 school districts missed a July 1st deadline to report incident numbers to Washington's Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. After questions about the poor compliance, state education officials extended the deadline and this month released a report based on data provided by 217 school districts. The numbers that state officials successfully compiled showed more than 20,000 incidents over a six-month period, and that gives no real insight into whether the restraint or isolation techniques were only used in an emergency where someone was likely to get seriously hurt, as the law requires. And that's the news for this week.
Why don't you criticize, you don't analyze, because you can see what I'm trying to be, trying to be. I've been lost and I've been blinded by all the things that I've seen. Overjoyed.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today in the studio by Julie Cartel, who is the Director of Clinical Services at Rosecrans here in Champaign-Urbana. And Rosecrans, for those of you who are listening who don't know, is the new operational director of what used to be Community Elements here. So the big agency here in town that serves people with mental health issues. So welcome to the program, Julie. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Vicki. It's nice to be here.
So why don't you introduce yourself first and talk a little bit about who you are and how you got into this work and kind of what your role is at Rosecrans. And then we'll get into the specifics about the agency.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Again, my name is Julie Cartel, and I'm the clinical director at Rosecrans, formerly known as Community Elements. And I've actually been with the agency almost 19 years. And so,
wow.
Yeah, quite a while. Prior to that, I was at Prairie Center. So I've had the opportunity to work in mental health and substance abuse over these last 20 years almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so Community Elements is probably most known for the services we do with people with mental health challenges. But we have really traditionally served a full continuum of both prevention, intervention, and emergency types of services, predominantly with mental illness. But in the last about 5 years, we began to try and develop some substance abuse services.
Mm-hmm.
Those have been fairly small for the adult population.
So besides Prairie Center, you
correct.
Mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Prairie Center has a much more comprehensive array of services than we have. We've been predominantly with mental health. But one of the exciting changes that is happening that we've become Rosecrans. Rosecrans out of Rockford is really known for their substance abuse treatment.
Hmm.
And so our merger with them will really help us to bring a larger continuum of substance abuse services to the community.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the merger and why that happened.
Well, the merger happened really in part of what I've just talked about. We know that many people with mental illness also have substance abuse, and many people with substance use disorders also have mental illness. And I think really to provide a much better integrated care, it would be important for us as an organization to be able to do both, so that people, when we work with them, they don't have to jump around from organization mm-hmm. to organization. If they don't want to, they could get all of their services at one place. And both substance abuse and mental illness are very intertwined. It's hard to separate them out sometimes about which came first,
mm-hmm.
Or what caused one or the other. And you don't always know that. And so to treat the whole person in a more holistic way, we felt it was an important service to the community. And that was part of what prompted this merger, is we weren't experts in substance abuse. Rosecrans was.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really looking for a partner that could really advance and bring more services to the community for us.
Okay. So when you're talking about Prairie Center, I mean, they've been around for a long time.
That's right.
That's different than what you're talking about here, because Prairie Center, is that a residential?
Well, Prairie Center has a residential services for adults. We right now are not interested in doing residential care. Mm-hmm. We're mostly focusing on our first line of business for substance abuse. We expanded our adult services, so now we're offering an intensive outpatient program for adults that have both mental illness and substance abuse challenges, mm-hmm. so what we call a co-occurring intensive outpatient, or IOP, some people will say. But the next thing we'll do is develop an IOP for adolescents with substance use disorders,
mm-hmm.
and that will be new for this community. So we're pretty excited about that. We expect those services to begin maybe late December, early January was probably more likely.
Oh, so very soon.
Very soon, mm-hmm. yes.
And so that's new. How many people in the community, just off the top of your head, how many people did Community Elements serve versus what you anticipate serving with Rosecrans? Do you have those numbers in your head, or is it about the same? Or
no, we hope that we'll be serving more, mm-hmm. More people together, since we'll be looking at expanding substance abuse services. That will be a population that Rosecrans, formerly Community Elements, we should expand and serve more individuals that way. And mm-hmm. the numbers I don't have off the top of my head, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that we serve each year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we'll have yet to see what our numbers will look like once we open up our IOP.
Right. So the funding mm-hmm. for services through Rosecrans, I'm sure, is impacted greatly by the state budget.
Right. I mean, our merger with Rosecrans became official July 1.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also the time that us as an organization, actually months prior to that, knowing the status of the state budget, not getting paid on contracts, we were already having to look at what services were we possibly going to have to reduce or end. And the merger did not result in us cutting services. What resulted in us cutting some services, which we've had to do, was the state budget.
Mm-hmm.
Our merger with Rosecrans will strengthen our continuum in substance abuse, but probably what more people in the community have heard is how we had to shut Time Center down. And many people still get confused because they think Time Center is closed, which it is not. But the one part of that service has been shut down, and that's what we call the Level 1. That was where we were able to help about 50 men in what we call the dorm side. It was people mm-hmm. basically sleeping on pads on the floor. They were part of a transitional living program. That got cut because funding got cut.
Mm-hmm.
What we still have at times is our Level 2 program, where it's 20 beds for guys who are working, needing to save some money in order to live independently. And it's mm-hmm. a 2-year program, and that is still continuing.
Mm-hmm.
But we also had to shut down our community soup kitchen, which was part of our Level 1 services, again, because of funding.
Yeah, that's very discouraging, I'm sure, both for you and certainly for the people who were being served by those program. So
yes, Times has been with the agency for a very, very long time. It was a hard decision for us to make to let that go, because it was in our hearts. We had been doing it for so long, but it just got to the place where we couldn't sustain it any longer.
Yeah, and the support for those programs came from the state of Illinois, not from the local mental health board, correct?
We had a combination of funds. I mean, we used funds both state and local that mm-hmm. made those services possible, and it was a reduction in both that really made the final decision for us to have to close that. So it was both. It was a big hit.
Mm-hmm. And do you serve both children and adults, or is it just adults at this point?
We serve children and adults, not. So we have early prevention services, early childhood programs that work with young moms and babies
mm-hmm.
all the way up through the lifespan.
I never realized that.
So we have a very broad continuum of care.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bulk of our services are to adults, but we serve children and adolescents as well.
So let's give you a couple of scenarios here. So I have, let's say I have an 8-year-old that I suspect has some kind of mental disorder of some kind. Where would be my starting point for utilizing services at your agency?
So what we have people do is call 398-8080, and they will get linked to our intake unit. Mm-hmm. And that is where people can, over the phone, so if you were the parent, we would take some general questions over the phone about what your concerns are. And then we would have them come in for an assessment. And then we would do an assessment of the youth, as well as interviewing the parents, trying to determine where the concerns are. And then we would talk about treatment options, if that was seemed appropriate, what the options would be. Mm-hmm. If treatment didn't seem the right course, then we would talk about other resources that might be helpful in the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then if I had a young adult child, say, 22 years old, and they were looking for, some help. Mm-hmm. Same type of process for them?
Mm-hmm. Same thing. They can call 398-8080, and we would begin to get them set up depending on what kinds of concerns they had. They also can walk in at our 801 North Walnut location, where they can walk in the mornings, and they can say they're here, they have concerns, and they need some help, and we'll do a screening with them and help mm-hmm. point them in the right direction.
Okay. So I come from the world of developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. My expertise is not in mental health mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. I certainly have learned a lot by interviewing people like you on this program. Mm-hmm. But with developmental disabilities, people who have disabilities that are, they have that label, they are eligible to get individualized funding from the state of Illinois that either helps them to pay for living in a group home or that gives them home-based support services so they can hire people to take them places and provide whatever supports they need. Is there something like that available for people with mental illness, or is it everything come through agencies like yours?
Well, the majority of the people that we serve do qualify for Medicaid. So mm-hmm. the Medicaid that they have, or they have a disability, they get disability, that typically covers any of the services that we have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
There are some individuals that do have like a home-based waiver so they can get more intensive services. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as often maybe in mental health as you might see in developmental disabilities. I'm less familiar with that mm-hmm. As well from the developmental disabilities
sure.
side. But we have the vast majority of our people can get the services they need through their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have someone that specializes in obtaining benefits for individuals if they come and do not have any kind of health care coverage. We'll help them fill out the paperwork to qualify.
Okay. And then just on that same topic, just for a moment, I know that at least a year or two ago that Community Elements was really digging into serving people with dual diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So people with developmental disability and mental health. Is that still happening, or is that been a dropped kind
of
a program?
We have really just one program and one clinician that works with individuals with both developmental disabilities and mental illness. So it's a very, very small, locally funded service that we do.
So that one is from the Mental Health Board then?
Is.
Okay.
It is, yes. Mm-hmm. And she's very, very busy.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what are the different roles that people have at the agency? Obviously, you're the director of clinical services. Who are the people? Are there psychiatrists? Are there, what are their roles and what do they do there?
Good question. We have a variety of service providers. So we have master's level licensed therapists that mm-hmm. are like licensed social workers, licensed clinical professional counselors. We currently have no psychologists on staff. We used to have psychiatrists, but those are now employed by Promise Healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in our same facility when we did have our psychiatrists at 801 North Walnut. They're still there, even though Promise is now their employer. So we've integrated with Promise Healthcare Francis Nelson, and mm-hmm. our psychiatrists are still there when the state cut almost $1 million. We couldn't sustain our psychiatrists, but Promise Healthcare stepped up, and now we still have psychiatrists in the community, which is really good. We also have individuals with bachelor's level in social work that are case managers who do a lot of the work in the community. In our group homes, we have people that we call RSAs. They're 21 and over, and we do quite a bit of training with them to help the individuals living in our group homes as well.
How many group homes do you have in the area?
Oh, gosh. We have three. Right now, we're operating two group homes. And then we have varying degrees of housing independence. So some people that are living with vouchers, but we provide supportive case management services. So we're checking in on them. We're helping them. But they need less than 24-hour types of services.
Yeah. So you're talking about vouchers from the housing authority that gives them a reduced rent and all that. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, well, very interesting. So what is the most unusual thing that is provided, would you say, at Rosecrans? Or is there anything unusual? Do you do things that typically other agencies around the state do the same way?
Well, I think most people are not aware of our early childhood mental health program.
Well, I certainly wasn't.
So that's probably... and many are, though there are many programs in the state, not many are connected to a community mental health. And so our early childhood infant mental health program, where we're working really on that parent-child relationship, because we know that has a huge impact on a developing brain and a young child's ultimate mental health and wellness. And so we work at that from birth, pre-birth even, all the way until that child is in school. So that's one program many people don't know about. And we're providing some mental health services in schools, some of the schools here locally. We have services out at the Juvenile Detention Center that are kind of unique. So we do have a couple of things that are more unique and smaller programs that people don't necessarily know as much about.
Yeah, and I think that you have, at least the Community Elements in the past, has been very involved in the anti-stigma campaign as well, which is so critically important. So how do you see things changing? You've talked a little bit about the really recent changes that have happened, the long-term vision. As Rosecrans, what's going to be happening in your, or what would you like to see happening?
Well, I think all of us would like to see a time when we can operate both our substance abuse and mental health services without any wait list. And right now we're doing that with our substance use services. We are more challenged to meet the need with mental health. I think for me, the ultimate goal is nobody would have to wait to get the care they need when they ask for it. And that's something that we're always striving for. We're always trying to figure out how to meet that need better and quicker. Because, you know, if you have to wait, sometimes you just change your mind.
Yeah, there are lots of wait lists in the state of Illinois. Yeah. So I get that.
And I think ultimately on the substance use side, we would like to see down the road sober living, where people can live in environments where they get the support they need 24/7, and they're in sober living environments. So I think there's real potential for that down the road. We're going to build towards that and hope that, you know, in the years to come, that that's something that we'll see as a reality.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Julie, is there a website, or give that phone number one more time?
398-8080 and www.rosecrans.org.
Julie Cartel, Director of Clinical Services at Rosecrans, right here in Champaign-Urbana. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com, or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week.